The biology team meeting that afternoon was superficially like the planetology meeting. Same conference room, same shuffling, seemingly random seating selection. Once again, Kossov sat in on the meeting, and again he chose a chair halfway down the table next to an attractive young woman. And again, everyone's attention focused on Kossov rather than the department head. There was one other difference, Brad saw. Felicia Portman was at this meeting, looking petite and altogether lovely among the other biologists. She recognized Brad down at the end of the table and smiled brightly at him. He grinned back at her. He had seen Felicia, of course, now and then during the 2 months since they'd first met, but always with other people around, a casual group, usually biologists. Although they had shared a few meals together with her teammates, Brad had not asked her for a date. Abruptly, Kossov got up from the chair in which he'd seated himself and went around the table to take the chair next to her. Before Brad could even think of what to do, the department's chairwoman called the meeting to order. Dr. Ursula Steiner was a handsome woman, regally tall, with splendid yellow hair coiled atop her head like a crown of gold. "Do you have to be blonde to be a department head?" Brad wondered. Again, MC began the meeting with a summary of what the remote sensors had learned of the intelligent natives of Planet Gamma. The sensors, palm-sized and disguised to resemble ordinary rocks, had been strewn near several of the villages that dotted the green fields and rolling hills of the planet. Since the natives appeared to be diurnal creatures, the rocks had been delivered by nearly silent helium-filled airships at night. None of the aliens seemed to have noticed them. The three-dimensional wall display showed one of the aliens, bipedal, tall, and willowy slim. Its skin was pale, blotched with irregular blue spots, no clothing at all, no obvious sexual organs. Its head rose above its shoulders like a bullet-shaped protuberance. No discernible mouth, large staring eyes on the sides of the head. They moved with a persistent back-and-forth twisting of the head, apparently scanning their surroundings constantly. A vertical slit between the eyes appeared to be a nostril. "Predators?" asked one of the biologists. "None identified as yet," answered MC's voice. "Apparently they were warm-blooded, apparently hermaphroditic. Two arms consisting of intertwined muscular tentacles that could separate or wrap themselves together at will. The ends of the writhing, twisting strands served much like fingers when they were brought together. While various non-invasive scans have produced a rough picture of the creature's innards, further details can only be obtained by direct examination of several individuals," said the computer's synthesized face from the wall screens.
"We'll have to go down to the surface and pick up a few of them," the chairwoman said, looking at Kossov.
"Eventually," Kossov replied. "They are omnivorous," MC reported. "I don't see a mouth in its head."
"It has a mouth in its abdomen. Observe."
The image on the screen flickered as it jumped ahead. Now it showed one of the aliens crouching near a flowering shrub at the base of a tall tree. It froze into immobility.
"Hunting behavior," said MC. "Note the finger-like extremities."
The alien's arm flexed the ends of its muscular strands, which twitched like boneless fingers. In its other arm, it gripped a short pointed stick. Faster than the human's eyes could follow, the alien's arm flashed into the shrubbery and spitted a writhing, screeching animal the size of a small reptile. A mouth in the lower section of its torso opened wide, showing wet red tissue inside, fringed with writhing, coiling, worm-like appendages. The alien stuffed its shrieking prey inside, and the mouth snapped shut, cutting off the screams of the doomed animal.
"Yuck!"
said a disgusted woman across the table from Kossov. Brad felt his own stomach turn uneasily, while moans and gagging gasps filled the conference room. Dr. Steiner rapped her knuckles on the table.
"Come on now! We're professional biologists, not children at the freak show."
"It looks pretty freakish," one of the younger men said, weakly. They spent the next hour discussing what data the remote sensors had amassed about the natives' physiology. "What about their social organization?" Brad heard himself ask. Dr. Steiner looked surprised, but quickly answered,
"We've concentrated on their physical structure and basic biochemistry. studies of their social behavior are scheduled for later.
Kossoff said, they seem to have established villages for themselves.
Yes, built of dried mud bricks, said the chairwoman.
Like adobe.
And they have farms on the outskirts of their villages.
Kossoff asked, any signs of conflict between villages?
None that we've detected, replied Steiner. They seem comparatively peaceful, non-competitive.
Of course, the villages are fairly well separated. Contacts between them must be comparatively rare.
They're hermaphroditic, said Felicia Portman. That removes a major source of conflict.
I suppose we'll have to go down and take a few of them up here to the ship for detailed physical examination. Brad asked, do we have the means to do that without letting them know that we're here?
Dr. Steiner scowled down the table at him.
If we want them to remain ignorant of our presence, I suppose we'll have to sacrifice any specimens we bring up here for examination.
Can't be helped, said one of the men halfway down the table.
But that would be murder, Felicia objected. I mean, after all, they're intelligent creatures.
Can't be helped, the department head echoed, looking squarely at Kossoff.
Kossoff shrugged his heavy shoulders. This is a decision we don't have to make today. Perhaps not for several weeks.
I agree, said Steiner. Shifting her gaze to Brad, she went on. No need for further discussion. Meeting adjourned.
Brad saw the hostility in her face. I should keep my big mouth shut, he told himself, as all the others pushed themselves up from their chairs and headed for the door. I'm an observer here, a guest. They resent my sticking my nose into their business.
But Felicia came up to him, with a questioning smile on her lips. Are you going to join the bio team? She asked teasingly.
Brad got up from his chair like a carpenter's ruler unfolding. Embarrassed, he muttered, I didn't mean to interfere.
Kossoff came up to them as the department head swept by and shot an annoyed glare at Brad.
For an anthropologist, Kossoff said, you don't seem to be able to sit back and observe without interfering with the subject of your study.
Brad felt his cheeks redden.
I just thought that... But Kossoff had already turned his attention to Felicia. I wonder if you'd like to have dinner with me tonight, Dr. Portman?
And he reached for her hand. A look halfway between surprise and alarm flashed across Felicia's face. Before she could reply to Kossoff, Brad said, I've already invited Felicia to dinner.
Looking relieved, she said to Kossoff,
perhaps some other time, Professor.
Brad gripped her arm lightly, and the two of them headed for the door, leaving Kossoff standing there. Brad could feel the heat of the older man's anger, like the glow of red-hot lava spilling from a volcano.
Thanks,
Felicia whispered to him as they reached the door.
Brad nodded.
Terrific afternoon, he thought. I've made enemies of the head of the biology department and the director of the scientific staff. Great. Yet he asked, half afraid of the answer, you'll have dinner with me?
Grinning, Felicia replied, I'll have to. Otherwise, the professor will know you lied about it.
Brad suddenly felt buoyant, realizing that he was going to have dinner with the best-looking biologist on the ship.
Dinner.
The starship Odysseus had been designed to make life as agreeable as possible for the voyagers who would travel 200 light-years from Earth. Each living compartment was furnished comfortably, within the constraints of budget and the psychotechnician's estimation of the difference between comfort and extravagance. There were three dining areas on the ship, plus a cafeteria big enough to handle roughly half the ship's complement at a sitting. Robot servers were unfailingly polite and efficient. Hydroponics farms provided fresh vegetables and fruits. Biovats produced high-quality meats from cell samples that were cultured and grown continuously, and seafood was bred in the artificial stream that meandered through the ship's middle. The most lavish of the dining rooms had been dubbed the Crystal Palace in a naming contest carried out before the ship's human travelers entered cryonic sleep. Now, as Brad escorted Felicia into the dining room, he saw how appropriate the name was. Crystal chandeliers, donated by a consortium of European jewelers, hung from the high ceiling, and crystal candlestick holders decorated every one of the damask-covered tables. Even the stubby flat-topped robots that buzzed between the tables each bore a fresh flower in a crystal vase.
It's all so beautiful, Felicia said as the human maitre d' led them to a table for two along the far bulkhead. She was wearing a V-necked golden blouse and knee-length skirt of deep brown. Brad felt distinctly shabby in his usual slacks and turtleneck. He admitted, it's a lot fancier than any restaurant I could afford back Earthside. As they took the chairs the robots proffered, Felicia said, I thought you've never been to Earth. Brad felt a pulse of alarm. She's read my dossier. Only for the final stage of our training, he replied, in Kazakhstan. It must have been difficult for you, Felicia said, her face etched with concern. With the higher gravity and all? Brad nodded. I had to wear an exoskeleton suit until my body adapted to a full G. I still get back pains now and then. Even though we're at half Earth normal gravity? He nodded and changed the subject. So where are you from? Once Felicia started talking, there was no stopping her. Brad happily listened right through the appetizers and main courses, glad that he didn't have to say anything more than the occasional, really, as Felicia spoke warmly of her childhood in Oregon and her family. But then her tone changed, and her face grew somber. Then my parents divorced. I was 12. It was a blow. You didn't know? With a sad shake of her head, Felicia replied, I thought they were happy together. They kept their quarrels from me until the very end. That's sad, Brad sympathized. It hurt, she said softly. It still hurts. You wonder if maybe it wasn't your fault. Maybe you made them unhappy. Brad reached across the table and took her hand in his. It wasn't your fault. Couldn't be. I don't know. Couldn't have been your fault, Brad insisted. Felicia tried to smile. Strange. I've never told anybody on the ship about the divorce. It hurt too much. Her smile brightened. But I told you. We're practically strangers, and I told you. Suddenly feeling uncomfortable, Brad tried to think of some way to change the subject. Have you ever been married? He blurted as their serving robot trundled up to their table with two orders of tiramisu on its flat top. Almost, she said, her smile dimming again. But it didn't work out. Smart move, Brad chided himself. You picked a great subject to lighten the mood. He wondered if the failed romance led to Felicia's joining the Star Voyaging Volunteers. Or did she leave Earth because of her parents' divorce? And you, she was asking, have you been married? Almost, he echoed. What happened? She walked out on me. I guess I wasn't enough of a party animal for her. On Mars? Dithonium chasma. Felicia's tentative smile disappeared completely. That must have hurt. Yeah, he said tightly. Your whole family died in that avalanche? Father, mother, and kid brother. How terrible for you. Yeah, he repeated. Trying to brighten up, Felicia said, Well, that's all in the past. We're here now, and we've got an important job to do. Brad nodded agreement. Glad to be on easier ground, he asked, Felicia, you're a biologist. Do you think it could be possible to bring a couple of the natives up here to the ship and then return them to their villages without their being aware of it? We'd have to keep them sedated the whole time. Otherwise, it would be a tremendous emotional shock to them. They wouldn't know what to make of us. Maybe they'd think we're gods, and they've been transported to heaven. Shaking her head, where the gods open them up to see what's inside them? We'd have to keep them sedated, like you said. I suppose so. Dr. Steiner doesn't seem to be happy with the idea, though. She'd rather kill them once she's through with them, Brad grumbled,